I'm going to start out probably something that you haven't heard too many preachers start out with. I'm going to start out by saying, I'm not ready. Just not ready, right? And when I say I'm not ready, I mean there are some things that you just can't quite get all the way ready for because, you want to be perfect. You want to get everything right. And then you just decide, you know what? I'm just going to go up there, let the Spirit lead me, do my best. Not that I'm not prepared, but certain subjects can be more difficult than others. And the topic we're going to talk about today, we're going to continue talking about, will the real Jesus stand up? Who really Jesus was? And before I even go any further, I'd like to just, it wouldn't be right for me to just say I'm not ready without, sharing some blame. So I'm going to start by blaming some people, throwing some people under the bus. First of all, if you have a difficult time hearing me, it's because I had to adjust my lapel because Lee told me last week that it was too close and I was too loud. So if you can't hear me in the back, it's Lee's fault. It was interesting as I was kind of putting the finishing touches on this. I gave Curtis Cherry a call and I talked to him about the subject. So if you don't like the sermon, then it's Curtis's fault, right? And, there's other things going on, some of the little technical ins and outs. And I was thinking about how I wasn't quite ready with everything. And as I've said before, from now on, if it's a problem with anything technical, it's the management's fault. So you can blame Jimmy, okay? You find Jimmy, you say, Jimmy, I didn't like the way that the song, that I didn't hear it right, or something on the screen is wrong. The point is, there's enough blame to go around. But I ask that you pray for me as we go through this. We're going to talk about Jesus and his image and how Jesus is misrepresented in so many ways. We've been talking about how a couple weeks ago, we talked about how prosperity gospel has distorted people's views into thinking about who Jesus really was, about blessings and what it means to actually be prosperous. And last week, we talked about the image of Christ, in particular, the fact that Christ was always projected as this soft, kind of meek, kind of weak figure. And today we're going to continue talking about the image of Christ in a different kind of way. The title of the sermon is called Mirror, Mirror on the Wall. Because ultimately, as the church, our goal as his disciples, as his followers, is that we reflect Christ in every possible way. And, we looked at these last week, right, where I've told you how I was going through and I'm looking at these pictures and Jesus always looked kind of soft. That was it. Pet the lamb Jesus, right, where Jesus was always kind of meek and he was always, he wasn't very strong. Like he wasn't projected like we think of superheroes. He was always in something, doing something and projected in a way that was very humble. Even in the cartoons, we joked about this, right? And how, it's like, hey, I know this is a raging storm, but, be cool. I'm happy, right? And again, the scary story. I love this picture. But there's another common thread that's unavoidable, right? It's kind of the elephant in the room that we all know, but a lot of people don't really like to talk about. And I've told you how I do my Google searches, or I'll go on Bing and I'll do these searches for images. And literally this one was a search and I said, Jesus image. And the thing that we notice, and that everybody knows, is that all these pictures of Jesus are white. That is what we often see. If I were to, not that we have to do this. We already closed our eyes last week. I asked you to trust me already. So I'm not going to ask you to do it again this week. But if you were to close your eyes and somebody say, think of a picture of Jesus. So often, the picture that comes up is this white guy. And ultimately, we know, those of us who have faith, we understand that his race and his color and the pigment in his skin is not ultimately what matters. But The question is, where did this even come from anyway? Where did this start? And for that matter, if it doesn't matter, if it doesn't make a difference what race he was and what color he was, then why were these, why are all of the images, or the vast majority of the images, that when you go and you look and you ask somebody about Jesus, why do they all come up white? Because here's the thing. White Jesus, that exists for some people. Just like for some people, black Jesus is real. Because race matters. And what I want to do today is take us down a road and look in the scriptures and see that while his race doesn't matter, his image very much does. And so I want to look at a few passages that speak directly to this. And we're going to start in Isaiah chapter 53, starting in verse 1. Says, who has believed our message, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? He grew up before him like a tender shoot and like a root out of dry ground. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by mankind, a man of suffering and familiar with pain. Like one from whom people hide their faces, he was despised, and we held him in low esteem. Surely he took up our pain and bore our suffering. Yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him. And by his wounds, we are healed. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to our own way. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. Now, at first glance, we look at this and we see, well, that's kind of just a very generic, very vanilla. There's no real details there, even as it's describing who Christ was. All it says is that, well, there was nothing that would attract us to him, no beauty, nothing that would draw us to want to be in his presence. Now, that isn't to be mistaken for saying that he was ugly or that he was, you know, disfigured in some way. But what it's essentially saying is he was just an ordinary guy. There was nothing. And keep in mind, understand that not only with Isaiah here as he's prophesying, but even in the New Testament, where we read about Jesus coming on the scene and starting his ministry in the Gospels. See, the Jews were expecting something different. They were looking for something. And if we're honest with ourselves, we're all looking for something. We have these expectations. And the Jews had these expectations that he was going to be tall, or he was going to be this military figure, this war hero, or that he was going to be handsome. What we see throughout the history was that when they were looking for kings and people to lead them, they looked at all these outward appearances. And what we see here is he's saying, no, when he comes, there's not going to be anything about him that's going to make him stand out like a shiny object. But that still doesn't give us a description about exactly what he looked like. And what we have to understand is that he had physical appearances that mattered, but it wasn't intended to stand out. There were things about him. See, he needed, in order to be able to reach those humble places, in order to be able to talk to people, see, sometimes not standing out, not looking different, sometimes that matters. And I want us to just kind of put a pin in this right here, because we're going to come back to this whole thing about Jesus not standing out and why it matters. But I want to continue talking about this theme. And why does image matter so much anyway? Why does the way a person looks, or the way that they dress, or their features, or how attractive they are, why does something like that matter so much anyway? And before we kind of turn up our nose at those people who pay too much attention to it, the question we have to ask ourselves is, how much does image matter to you? How much does appearances matter to you? You know, we think about it. This is an image, and I'm going to give a quick, like, 2-minute history lesson. I'm going to give you the Cliff Notes version of this. But these are images. These are ink impressions. But these were illustrations of missionaries as they were going out into foreign countries, South America and Africa. They were going out, and they were telling people about Christ. And see, what happens is the way that these missionaries went on, I'm going to give you a quick, brief synopsis here. And I want to ask a question first. Why do you think it is that so many of the images over these centuries have projected and portrayed Jesus as being white? Because it may not be what you think, right? See, these missionaries, these are images of them. It's kind of, this was humorous to me, because when I looked up missionaries, they actually have Lego missionaries. Like, now that's really pushing it hard when you're giving, you know, to the kids. But when we think about image and why it matters, see, you know, we talked about the mega church. We talked about how it is that people show up for certain things with certain expectations. So here's how it goes. There were no images of Christ that were done prior to the third century. There were no images because people thought of it as being sacrilegious and unholy to even reduce Christ to the point of even having an image. And so what happens is, once Christianity began to gain popularity, people wanted to push Christianity. They wanted to make it appealing to people who didn't know about Christ. And so, in an effort to do that, they made images that, frankly, would look like them. Because this started with the Greeks and the Romans, right? And we're going to come back to this in a second. But I want you to think about, why would somebody want to put an image out there of Christ if it was something that was considered forbidden and something that was considered not only unnecessary, but wrong? Acts chapter 17, starting verse 24, it says, "The God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth, and does not live in temples built by human hands. And he is not served by human hands as if he needed anything. Rather, he himself gives everyone life and breath and everything else. From one man, he made all the nations that they should inhabit the whole earth. And he marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their lands. God did this so that they would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from any of us. For in him we live and move and have our being. As some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring. Therefore, since we are God's offspring, we should not think that the divine being is like gold or silver or stone, an image made by human design and skill. In the past, God overlooked such ignorance, but now he commands all people everywhere to repent. For he has set a day when he will judge the world with justice by the man he has appointed. He has given proof of this to everyone by raising him from the dead." We see here in this passage what I was alluding to. It wasn't just something where it's like, well, you can kind of take it or leave it. They said, no, you don't make an image of God. You don't illustrate and you don't put a picture or a drawing of Jesus for anybody to see. That you don't reduce him to that level. And there's a very good reason why. It's because oftentimes we've seen throughout history, we saw in the scriptures that people have a problem with idols. They have a problem with becoming stuck on the image of that thing that was projected to them instead of the real identity of who Christ was, his character, what he stood for. God fully expects us to see more than just whether or not somebody has a certain type of eyebrows or whether they have a beard or not. Because he doesn't want us to get caught up and idols. He doesn't want us to get caught up and get distracted by the wrong things. And you may be thinking, well, where are you going with this? Why does any of this matter? Why are you talking about idols? Why are you talking about these pagan gods? What's the harm in doing an illustration? It's not as though you're saying this is an accurate representation. They clearly didn't have photography back then. But why do idols matter? To continue what I was saying before, the reason why the Greeks and the Romans were making images of Christ to propagandize, if you will, the message was a couple of things. One was, if you're an artist, it's really hard to sell your paintings if he doesn't look like this. See, this is an illustration of the Greek god Apollos. I mean, it's obviously a cartoon rendering. But remember we talked about this with how Jesus was projected kind of soft and weak, and that wasn't even an accurate representation. Forget the white skin. Just the fact that he was always shown as being weak and sad and almost pitiful, skinny, was how it was described by many people who are historians. In order for them to be able to push this and spread this throughout Greek and Roman territory, they wanted to give people this idea that Jesus looks just like you. That he actually, and not only that, but you think about who these Greek gods were, the Herculeses and the Zeuses and all of them. That's why you got the stringy long hair. That's why you got the certain features that you got. And then, you know, later on, centuries later, people who had motives, nefarious motives for keeping this image, this is what they did. But the point is, when you see the image that so many people have seen with artist depictions and illustrations of Christ, and the reason why he was the white guy with the long hair, even though you know that that's not even possible if you live in that country, it's the same reason why you put this image out there for kids. You want to portray him as a hero that people can identify with. You want that to be the image that sticks in people's head. That's what they were doing. See, and if we're not too pious right now, then we can honestly sit back in sober judgment and realize that churches, if they're not careful, they can fall into the same thing. The same thing, which is, I'm not interested in giving an accurate depiction of Jesus and his image and his character and who he was. I want the rest of the world to identify positively and favorably about who Jesus is. So I want to make the church look like something. I want to make it look like me. I want to make it fit my image instead of the church fitting the image of Christ. See, it was hard to sell this in the 5th century AD in Rome to say, hey, this is what he actually would have looked like. Now, I'm not saying this is actually what it would have looked like, but this is closer. Certainly, this is an early, what people describe as a more accurate depiction of what he would have looked like. But the fact of the matter is, it's hard to sell that back there in Greece, 600 AD. And sometimes, if we're not careful, we will compromise the gospel so that we can sell it to people right now in 2018. Not based on the color and the skin tone and what region of the world he was from, because we already understand those things don't matter. The Bible didn't put those descriptors in there because they didn't matter. We know what matters, but do we project that image of Christ? Do we sell that image of Christ to those who are lost, those who need him? Luke chapter 22. Starting in verse 54 says, then seizing him, they led him away and took him into the house of the high priest. Peter followed at a distance, and when some there had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and sat down together, Peter sat down with them. A servant girl saw him seated there in the firelight. She looked closely at him and said, this man was with him, but he denied it. Woman, I don't know him, he said. A little later, someone else saw him and said, you are one of them. Man, I'm not, Peter replied. About an hour later, another asserted, "Certainly this fellow was with him, for he is a Galilean." Peter replied, "Man, I don't know what you're talking about." Just as he was speaking, the rooster crowed. The Lord turned and looked straight at Peter. And then Peter remembered the word the Lord had spoken to him. "Before the rooster crows today, you will disown me 3 times. And he went outside and wept bitterly. We have to ask ourselves, does the image of Christ empower us? The true image of Christ. The things that matter, his character, what he stood for, what he believed in, what he was willing to sacrifice for. Does that empower you? Or does that make you cower back? Is his image something that you're ashamed of? Maybe I'll put it a different way. You know, I was thinking about if Jesus, and I don't mean this from a resurrection type of standpoint, but if Jesus were like, if his ministry were today, ask yourself this, where would Jesus spend his time hanging out? What would he be doing? Who would be the people that he affiliates with? And then ask yourself, would you be there with him? Do you hang out with those people? Do you spend time in those places? Would Jesus feel welcome and feel like this is the church? This is the congregation. This is the place where he needs to be. See, what we have to remember is Jesus isn't going to come in here and start counting heads and see how many black people or how many white people. Like, we don't even have any images of Jesus up in here for very good reason. But when you dig a little bit deeper, we have to ask ourselves, are we interested in this church looking like us or looking like Christ? And if this church does look like Christ, if we're doing the things of Christ, are you proud of that? Or do you still want to make it look a little more like you? These are tough questions. You know, we have to ask ourselves, because let's face it. Let's just be honest here. We're all adults in here. We sent the kids downstairs. We can talk about this. There are actually people who will not worship with you because they're not comfortable with the amount of white people or black people that are in this church. There are people that won't worship with you because you worship with a white person or a black person. So before we just dismiss the idea that the image of Christ matters, it's not that it matters. We understand that that's foolish thinking. That's exactly what Paul was saying. But the question is, what matters to you? What matters most to you? Whether or not the world sees you and who you fellowship with in this church and what we're doing based on appearances, or whether we reflect who Christ genuinely is. You know, I talked about who would Christ be hanging out with, you know, and it's like, would he be doing this? Would he be serving people who are homeless, who are hungry? Because Christ was interested in the poor and the hungry and those who needed justice. Would you be willing, if it came to it, to go to jail, to be in prison, to have your name scandalized? Because what we see there with Peter was, it was all good until the persecution came. There's persecution that comes with being the church that Christ actually wants us to reflect. If you're going to be like Jesus, he already said it. If you're going to be like me, what did it say? You're going to be familiar with that suffering and that persecution and that sorrow and that pain too. Are you willing to die? Are you willing to give it up for his name? Are you willing to stand in the gap for somebody who's being unjustly treated or punished? Because the reason why there's no images of Christ that are ever going to accurately represent what he physically looked like is because we don't need to follow somebody because they're that type of hero, because they look like us. It doesn't matter if they look like us. It doesn't matter if Jesus looks like us. The question is, do we look like him? When people see you, do they look at you and think, that person looks like Jesus? I had this joke. You all laughed at me. You thought it was funny because I've told you how years ago my wife told me, you look more like Jesus than anybody I've ever met in my life. And I told you that was the greatest compliment I ever got. I didn't care if she meant it. Didn't make a difference. I took it. Is that what you want to be said about you? Because if a person sees you behaving like Christ and living like Christ and looking like Christ, the first thing they're not going to think, they're not going to be thinking, I wonder what nationality they are. Or I wonder how much money they make. I wonder when their parents or grandparents came over from whatever country they got here from. No, if they see Jesus in you, they're not thinking about the imagery, the picture, the eyebrows, the facial structure. They're thinking about, this person loved me, this person served me, this person forgives me, this person sacrifices. Is that the image that you want to project? Few questions before we end up here. Do I care more about the appeal that the church has to outsiders or the integrity in how we reflect Christ as the body? I say this again. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, because here's the thing. If we're going to reflect Christ here in Dover, in Little Delaware, we're very, very unlikely to have a mega church. Very unlikely. That road is narrow. We're very unlikely to get some of the people that we love and we're family, friends, people that we've known for years. They're very unlikely to come. It's not for everybody. Being like Jesus is not for everybody. There's no room for propaganda. There's no room to try to make Jesus more palatable and more comfortable. The fact of the matter is, Jesus was a man who suffered. He went through a lot of pain, but he did it to honor his Father the same way that we should. Does the racial, cultural, and socioeconomic makeup of the church affect how you think or live, or how you think about the work that God has for me? And here's what I mean by this question. With the makeup of this church, change your attitude or your opinion about what we can do with the Holy Spirit guiding us? Does it change the fact that maybe if we had a few more of this, or a few more old people, a few more young people, a few more black people, a few more white people, then maybe I would sacrifice more. I would give more. Maybe I would serve more. Maybe I would have more people into my home. Maybe I would spend more time in the fellowship. Because just like those images of white Jesus or black Jesus or whatever Jesus you have in your mind, just like those images affect you, we have to be devoid of that. That's exactly what we see there, what Paul was saying. We have to get it out of our mind that, you know what, I'm just not comfortable in this church or that church because it doesn't really reflect me. Does it reflect Christ? You might think, well, you know what? Church is getting a little bit darker. The complexion is changing a little bit. The environment, the neighborhoods around here, things are changing. But what if that's God's will for you? True story. I grew up in a predominantly white church for most of my childhood. And then I moved, went to college, things changed. It was a predominantly black church. But at no point did I choose to be in fellowship with brothers and sisters and believers based on the complexion of their skin or what the view of Christ was. Does that stop? Does that affect you? Does that give you cause for pause? Or can you honestly say, I don't care who gets in the waters of baptism. I don't care who gives their life to God. I don't care who I'm locking arms with in this fight. I want to see him. and I want him to recognize me. How easily do I allow idolatry creep? New term, I just made it up. How easily do I allow idolatry creep into my life under the guise of being more relatable, tolerant, or productive? Does my ministry look like one that Jesus would have set up or been a part of? This is such a real thing for us because, yes, we want to put our best foot forward. We want to project. We want to make people feel comfortable and happy and everything else. But you can't compromise the truth to make that so. We saw that a few weeks ago with Peter. And how he said, stand up and eat. Kill and eat. Don't call anything I made unclean. But do we have that idea? Do we have that attitude that says, I'm not going to allow my image of what I think things should be, what is in my mind, I'm not going to let that trump what I see in the Word. I'm not going to let that bother me or deter me from what I know I'm supposed to be doing. And the final question, and probably the most important question, if you take nothing else away from this, take this. Do I look like Christ? Am I in his image? And am I actively seeking to be more like him in character and spirit? When we walk out of these doors today, the one question we all have to walk out of here in confidence and say is that I look as much like Christ as I possibly can. That I reflect Christ when I go home, when I go to my job, when I go into my neighborhood, when people see me out and about, that I am reflecting Christ. Do I look like him? Do we bear a family resemblance? And none of that can be determined by looking at your forehead. None of that can be determined by looking at your shoulders or the way that you walk. Unless you're talking about walking in the Spirit. Unless you're talking about how you carry yourself. None of those things can be determined by looking at your skin color. We have to be the opposite of the world. We have to reflect Christ regardless of who is right here in front of us, regardless of who he puts in our path. The eunuch comes across the path of Philip, and there was no litmus test. There was no, let me decide if I'm going to, you know, vet him for. No, it was this man wants the word. He wants to know what it means. And he says, teach me. And when they found the water, he said, why shouldn't I be baptized? That has to be our attitude. Clearly, Philip wasn't an Ethiopian. Otherwise, they wouldn't have put it in there that he was an Ethiopian. That's why it was made and remarked and made known that this guy was different. But it didn't stop Philip. And it shouldn't stop us. It shouldn't even give us a cause for pause. Because Jesus didn't go to the black or the white side of town. He went where there were poor and afflicted and sick and those who were marginalized and those who needed help. Do you look like Christ? Are you someone who needs to look like Christ? Have you ever committed your life to saying, I want to follow him to the day I die and I want to be a disciple and I want to give myself to him. I want to be baptized. I want to repent. I want a new life so that I can look like him. If that isn't a decision that you've ever made, make it now. Make a commitment that you're going to look like Christ. That you're going to bear that resemblance. That you're going to follow him. If you maybe stepped away and you haven't been one who has taken the time to really commit yourself to him because maybe you used to, but then you got distracted. Those weeds and those thorns came up and choked you out. It's not too late. You can come back and say, just like Peter. That's why I use that example, Peter, because just like Peter, he denied him three times. He didn't want it. But Peter was reinstated. Do you want to be reinstated? Do you want to be back to full relationship with God? As a church, we will help you. We will teach you. We will pray for you. But don't let this opportunity pass you by. to say, I am committed and I want to look like Christ. I want to look like him more than I'm concerned about whether or not he looks like me, because I know I'm not perfect. I want to look like him. Please stand as we sing our song of invitation.